The next matter on our calendar for oral argument is the matter of citizen petition for preparation of an environmental assessment worksheet for the proposed Summit Avenue Regional Trail. Good morning.
Good morning.
I assume we have counsel for respondent probably out in the hall. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Our next case for oral argument is in the matter of the citizen petition for an EAW for the proposed Summit Avenue Regional Trail. Council, you're certain familiar with our procedures. I'll just remind you that you will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. Council for relators will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. It's important that you identify your name and the party you represent when you begin your arguments. And it looks like you are raring to go, counsel for relators, and you may do so.
Good morning. My name is Brian Bell, and I represent Save Our Streets in this appeal. The question before the court is whether the Summit Avenue Regional Trail Plan may have the potential for significant environmental effects. The city claims that they adequately assess this question. The city makes this argument despite at the same time conceding that the trail may result in irreversible damage to some of the existing tree canopy. The city reconciles these two competing petitions by claiming it will evaluate any environmental effects, if ever, at the detailed design and engineering phase. It also claims that environmental review is unnecessary because it will implement unspecified mitigation measures.
Can I stop you before you get farther? I have kind of a basic question, and that is, as I read all the briefing, it seems clear that the bike lane creation will occur kind of when and if this Summit Avenue is undergoing major reconstruction to replace culverts, infrastructure, all that. Am I correct about that? Because I think that's part of the city's argument is there's going to be some risk to trees and already because of the curbs and gutters being changed for this major roadway reconstruction. Do I have that right?
Your Honor, there has been statements by the city that it will happen at the same time, though there is nothing in the record or in the law that requires that to be the case, that they occur at the same time. I would also note that would just make the environmental impacts more significant.
Right. So, that was going to be my next question. Is there been a petition or any environmental assessment done with respect to sort of the underlying road improvement project?
No, Your Honor, not to my knowledge.
Okay. Thank you.
So there's really just three questions that I want to focus on this, or really issues that I want to focus on this morning. The first issue that I want to address is the city's rationale that an EAW is unnecessary in this case because the impacts to the tree canopy will be temporary. This is what we refer to as the trees will grow back theory. That is both affected by an error of law and arbitrary and capricious. It's affected by an error of law because the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act requires only that an environmental impact be significant, does not require that an environmental impact be permanent. If the city or indeed this court concludes that the impact to the tree canopy may have the potential for a significant environmental effect, the environmental assessment worksheet has to be completed.
Mr. Bell, before you go, your answer I'm lingering back to Judge Bjorkman's question. It's kind of been lingering a little bit for me, and so I want to kind of expand on that a little bit, see if I can understand your answer. They have said, I thought I saw in the plan, that their intention is to do it at the same time, and what you're indicating is you're not aware of any particular plan in terms of when the actual road infrastructure is to be repaired, but we also have seen and heard from the city that they also don't have a particular time and plan, and if this bike path project would occur, so it almost, and in fact, they don't have funding for it, and they also have multiple designs that haven't yet been resolved. So it almost seems like you got two major projects of which may have a significant impact, none of which right now is in a specific plan to do. And so why, given our case law, and especially the phrase in terms of a project being definite and site-specific, it sounds like a lot of question marks that neither is fully yet set. Importantly, the bike path.
Your Honor, I think we have to go back to what is the purpose of environmental review. And the purpose of environmental review is to inform decision-making. And so if we do as the city suggests and wait until the detailed design and engineering phase, which is a phase in which we really just flesh out what has already been set in the 100% plan, we are not at that point moving what is an off-road bike lane back onto the road because we already have that 100% plan. And so if the city decides or discovers in the design and engineering phase that, you know what, we can't actually protect the tree canopy to the same extent that we thought we could, it is not the stage at which those significant decisions can be made. That's why environmental review under Minnesota law has to occur as early in the process as is feasible. And this court's precedent in Minnesotans for Responsible Recreation set three factors to consider with whether a proposed project warrants environmental review. It has to be definite, it has to be site-specific, and it has to contemplate on-the-ground environmental changes. Those are the three requirements.
And isn't the definite's the big question mark, isn't it? Because if you don't have funding, it's not going to occur. And until there's a formal action by the city with funding, wouldn't that then be the point at which definite has now been triggered?
Your Honor, I don't think definite in that case should suggest that it's definitely will occur. I think that it is definiteness in the sense of it has a definite plan or a well-fleshed-out plan. Here we have a 60% plan, we have a 90% plan, we have a 100% plan. It really doesn't get more definite than a 100% plan. The design and engineering, again, is just to implement what has already been set in that Summit Avenue Regional Trail Plan, which was approved by both Met Council and the city. And so when the agencies or the Public Works Department goes and does that design and engineering, it is doing it within the confines of the plan that was approved by the City Council. If the court were to require that it is definitely going to happen, that the plan is definitely going to happen, that would defeat the purpose of environmental review, because environmental review, it could be that the city decides we don't need a new trail at all, or we need a new trail, but maybe it should be in a different location, or maybe it should be on street rather than off street. All those things need to be able to, the environmental analysis needs to be able to inform all of those decisions. And if we were to wait until what the respondent in response said, which is that it's a shovel-ready project, or that it's partially conducted, that is just too late in the development of a project for environmental review to be meaningful.
Council, when I look at metallic leases, we were evaluating whether there was a project, and we applied a standard of review of whether the DNR acted in an arbitrary and capricious manner by determining that the sales of leases did not constitute a project. Suggesting to me that the standard of review for whether there's a project is whether it's arbitrary, the determination that there's not is arbitrary and capricious. Could you speak to that? What's our standard of review in determining whether there's a project?
Your Honor, I think that it can be multiple standards of review. I mean, I think you obviously arbitrary and capricious applies, but I think we would also look at, was the city's decision affected by an error of law? And in this case, the city applied, it considered whether the project was substantially certain to be undertaken. That is the standard that applies if we have a phased action. So if we have a highway that's going to proceed in multiple phases, if each phase is substantially certain to be undertaken, we would evaluate it at the same time. So we would look at, is it affected by an error of law? Here it is. We would also look at, is it supported by substantial evidence? So despite that that the city applied the correct law, is it affected by, is there not substantial evidence to support that it isn't a project? And I would submit here that in addition to being affected by an error of law, the fact that we have a 100% plan suggests that it is a definite, well-developed plan.
Is that the case, even though the plan itself calls for review, for example, by the Forestry Division
CHIPO.
Yeah. If it actually expressly contemplates that further review, even though it's called 100%, it's contemplating review, especially on mitigation issues, which are, you're saying, are not specific enough, but it actually says that is part of further review. How can that be a complete, final, definite plan when it expressly says more will be done in order to determine those measures, which are relevant to an EAW requirement?
Focusing on the State Historic Preservation Office in particular, that is only a consultation process. So in that process, the city goes to the State Historic Preservation Office, and I think may have, in fact, here, and asks for feedback on the plan. The city is not obligated to adopt what the SHPO has said. All it has to do is that consultation process. So it's not really, like environmental review, a significant decision impacting state. And it, of course, only focuses on historic resources.
I'm not suggesting it's a substitute for it. I'm just getting into the point whether it's premature, whether the petition is premature or not. Is there sufficient maturity to the plan when it expressly says we're going to do more review, and then maybe they decide, no, we're not going to do this historic, preserve this, the curbs, or we're going to do this with the trees, and then the petition challenges what in the end is the more definite mitigation efforts?
Your Honor, I mean, I think in this case, they actually have already gone to the State Historic Preservation Office. I don't candidly know that it's in the record, but I have seen that there has at least been some feedback from the State Historic Preservation Office on this. But again, I would say that all of these, including the Forestry Department, these are fleshing out the details of a plan that has already been set. There may be some suggestions by the Forestry Department regarding how to protect trees, but the Forestry Department will be limited in its ability to do that if it is set with an off-road bike lane. In that case, its discretion to protect the trees will be dramatically limited. And I guess the final...
Which is what they could conclude. We can't protect them. It's going to be, we don't know what they will say about the protection of it. And so at that point, doesn't that make your challenge more definite? Your consultation has shown that you can't protect the trees.
But, Your Honor, then at that point, they would just have to go back to the drawing board and start over, which would show that the real point of decision was at that 100% plan, because the 100% plan is where they made the decision that this was going to be a grade separated or an off-road bike lane. And so going and saying now we can't protect the trees, they would just have to start from the drawing board again. Your Honors, the second point that I wanted to make was that the city's decision was again affected by an error of law and unsupported by substantial evidence when it concluded that the streetscape is not protected by Summit Avenue. That is legally irrelevant because the Minnesota Environmental Policy Act requires only that a historic resource be a historic resource, not that it be a historic resource on the National Register. So that was that rationale was affected by a misunderstanding of the law. It's actually also just more fundamentally factually inaccurate. The city's own.
May I just ask you to make clear for me for sure with respect to the historic, whether it's a streetscape or otherwise. You argue in your opening brief, you say you think there's arguably a requirement for a mandatory EAW, arguably, but I don't know that you tell us whether you're arguing that in your principal brief.
Yes.
Your reply brief seems to assert it more affirmatively. Are you arguing that this is a mandatory EAW situation?
Although it doesn't need to be, yes, because the historic streetscape is protected on the National Register, and for that mandatory category, it does have to be listed on the National Registration.
The mandatory, then, part of the other streets and part of the historic district, there are other streets, I think, that are listed, Grand Avenue, et cetera. Does that apply to all of the streets that are listed? And they fall within that, triangle of historic district?
To the extent that those are, I think they would for the historic Hill District, which I think starts at about Lexington Avenue. The rest of the West Summit Avenue is just Summit Avenue from Lexington West. And so in that case, yeah, it would apply to destruction of any of those other streets in that designation.
So a street in your mind is a property for purposes of Rule 44.10.4600, the mandatory EAW.
If that's part of the registration, let's just say for a moment that the historic Summit Avenue Hill District didn't exist and just the James J. Hill House were designated. In that case, of course, the street wouldn't apply. But here, with Summit Avenue,
because plainly, it's part of the 75 block, it's a 75 block area, right? The Hill District, as I understand it.
I think that's correct, Your Honor. Thank you.
Counsel for respondent.
May it please the court, counsel. I think you're all correct that we're here prematurely.
Could you state your name, please, and the party you represent? Thank you.
Apologies. Daniel Staley, Stahley, Assistant St. Paul City Attorney.
Thank you.
I think you're correct that we're here prematurely, but
I don't know that we've said that yet, so we're asking about it. Would you do me the favor of just lifting up, or you could just pause for a second. The podium will toggle up a little bit. I'm just having a little trouble hearing you with a mic at the microphone a little closer. Thank you. Thanks so much. Because my question is, can you tell us why this is not like Minnesotans for Responsible Recreation? Why this is not like the case where the court decided that specific trails proposed by the DNR were in fact projects?
Yeah, again, there's no funding source. It isn't on the city's work schedule for 2024 or 2025. This was a study that was conducted by the city, an extensive study on the need for a regional trail. The rule requires, 4410.0200 subpart 65. A project contemplates more than just simple government approving of a project. There needs to be physical activity undertaken. And so far there's been no permits applied for, no permits issued. There's no construction schedule. But I think I have an easier out for you. I think the best argument here and the most important one is that under Rule 4410.4600, subpart 14D, those are the exemptions.
Before we go there, can I just still linger a moment on whether there's a project here or not, or whether it's premature? Could you tell us when, if this is not mature now, if it's not a project now, that it's too early, when would it become a project? At what has to happen for this to become a project that petitioners can then fairly submit a petition for an EAW?
I think a funding source, a more definite plan, once we're certain exactly what's going to go forward. For instance, like you are correct that there is still additional, there's a section 106 review that still has to be done that we do intend on doing. So it's, and there's a portion of Summit Avenue segments A and C where we still haven't determined, you know, exactly what the layout's going to be. There's in this case, there's just a, there's still uncertainties. This was kind of a study that was conducted, one that in the future we may pursue. But like I said, in this case, it's there's a construction schedule that comes out every year, 2024, and we have one for 2025 already, and it's not part of that.
So literally, what would happen? I mean, this is the situation different from some cases, of course, where a third party is seeking a government permit. But this is a government's own project, and it has a plan, and you say, well, it's not been funded yet. I assume funded, and the city of St. Paul approved this SART plan.
It's, yes.
And so what would happen next for it to be funded? Does that mean the city council deciding we are going to, in fact, fund this project?
Yeah, there would need to be an appropriation through city council and public hearing.
And is it only at that appropriation time that let's say there is a meeting in which the city decides we are going to fund this project. At that point, a petition would not be premature. Is that correct?
At that point, yeah, it would be appropriate to bring a petition at that point.
And that is that the earliest that it could be brought?
I think that's when the project becomes definite.
Go ahead.
I was just going to follow up with the question that I asked Relators Council, and that is that running through all the briefing is this notion that this bike development of the bike lane is tied to a bigger reconstruction of the 5.5 miles of Summit Avenue. Has that project been funded, or where is? First, do you agree that those are tied together, or you take that position? And secondly, when is that project going to be?
They're not officially tied together, but I think the thought in Public Works was that we're going to be tearing up these streets anyways. This would be a great time to incorporate the trail because it's going to cause less damage. It's going to be less expensive. The street's going to be torn up already. So I think that is their plan, that when different portions of the street are torn up, that they would add this kind of on a piecemeal project. It might be 10, 12 years before the entire trail is complete, because I think as we sit here today, I believe there is one portion where there is a reconstruction of the street that is set to occur. I believe that's from Victoria to Lexington.
And that was sort of postponed before because of the SART plan, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's going forward right now. And if it is, I think the trail part isn't plan to be part of that. I do think that Victoria to Lexington, from my recollection, is that is on the charts to be constructed this year or next year.
So that would be a project for which,
yes,
that would not be, for which a petition would not be premature.
Yes.
Mr. Staley, we'll linger just one more moment on that, and then part of what Mr. Bell, on behalf of his clients, makes a pretty convincing argument is that you do emphasize, of course, this has been 2 years in the making. We got 277 pages, and this goes to the merits, and we've got all this analysis. So I appreciate your candor. It's in the sense that your answer to Judge Smith was funding would make it the project. This seems awful close to a project, and more so than in the responsible recreation, where part of the concern was plans are not, but then these plans really seem to get pretty close. Am I reading that correctly by your analysis on the merits? We've gone into all these details in responding to the point.
Sure. This was a study to study kind of the feasibility of the Summit Avenue Trail. There's a lot of analysis that was done as to, you know, what would be the most appropriate way. There were studies done on driving studies, pedestrian studies, biking studies. So yeah, I think it was that they were studying this project as to whether it's a feasible project, what's the best way to do it. But again, it doesn't. Without a funding source, it doesn't exist. There are a lot of projects that we hope can get done. not all of them have funding.
And part of the feasibility, though, did include money? In other words, how much it was going to cost, or does the city have that information, just hasn't acted?
Yeah, it's in there. I think they did an analysis of the general cost of the project, which I think would likely be less than what is in there, because that contemplated just the trail without, you know, there'll be some cost savings if it's done alongside regular reconstruction of the underground utilities.
One of the things that strikes me about the record here is the divergence between what relators, arborist, estimates potential tree loss versus what the city has estimated. You know, to what extent in assessing an EAW can a government unit simply reject evidence submitted by a petitioner?
Sure. The RGU has discretion to make its own analysis. It doesn't have to consider studies brought by outside entities. It has discretion to make its own determination, and it did make its own determination based on its own detailed analysis. I don't want to get into a kind of a, this isn't a factual dispute issue here, but after Relator's report did come out and they kind of, their interpretation of that report, the actual engineers that wrote it did come to the city and said, what they're saying is not true at all. Like, it's, so again, their interpretation, what they've been representing to the court and to the public is not accurate.
Is that in the record?
It's not in the record, and and we're not here to argue findings of fact. The RGU has the discretion to make its own analysis, and it did conduct its own study. Didn't come to the determination that, you know, in this case, I think that there were 140 trees that they believe have the potential to be damaged. And then they put forth a very large mitigation plan with many, many, you know, for instance, they have a plan not to have protective fencing around every tree, to have no use or storage of any heavy machineries around trees, to mulch every tree in the protection zone, to aerate the soil, additional watering. They have a plan to repair compacted soil during construction. The city forester will review and approve all construction plans. The city forester will oversee construction near trees and will repair damage that occurs during construction. The city forester will maintain and monitor the health and water of the trees. And if a tree is irreparably harmed, the forester will replace it with a diverse array of new trees.
Mr. Steele, just to follow up Judge Bjorkman, the answer you had, while it's true the RGU is given discretion, isn't it true that the city has to exercise its discretion of all the evidence, including what's in the petition? If it's simply not responded to, how is that an exercise of discretion?
Sure. It considered everything in the petition. It made its findings of fact. Its findings of fact concluded that there will be some damage to some trees.
Right. But what I mean is, it ignored some specific expert opinion. I understand there can be disagreement, but if it's just simply ignored, how do we know it was anything more than ignored, and is that a proper exercise of discretion?
I would disagree that it was ignored. Everything in the petition was reviewed and accepted. There were findings of fact that were made. The particular report wasn't addressed in the findings of fact, but everything was considered, and the findings and the analysis made by the RGU considered everything that was part of the record in their decision. And I would like to get to the exemptions under the EQB rules, because I think it's very important here. There's a specific exemption that says anytime that there is a bike path that is constructed within an existing right-of-way, we do not need EQB review. We do not need environmental review. It's a very specific statute that applies exactly to this situation. It's clear, it's concise, it's directly on point.
Mr. Staley, did the city rely on that in its negative determination? I didn't recall seeing it. And if not, is that something that would be properly considered by this court?
It wasn't addressed in the negative declaration. I think the court can take judicial notice of a rule that's applicable. It applies to the specific case, the situation. I think Relator's argument against it is that it was titled under a section called Highway Projects. You know, I think and they're saying, well, this isn't a highway, but if you look at the text of the rule, it's very clear that it applies to any existing right-of-way, a bicycle path constructed within the right-of-way. That's exactly what we have here. And while it's not defined in EQB rules under Minnesota Statute 169.011, Subdivision 81, highway is defined as the entire width between the boundary lines of any place or part or way that is open to the public as a matter of right for purposes of vehicular traffic. So I think that it falls into at least Minnesota statute's definition of what a highway would be. Again, I think the standard of review here is important. The RGU's determination can only be reversed if the court finds it's arbitrary and capricious. The burden of proof is on the relator to establish that our findings are not supported by the record. And again, you know, the record is that Exhibit 17, the 277-page analysis that I think goes into all of the issues that relator is concerned about. They're concerned about, and I think it's important to look at, you know, when our EAW is required, they're required in very limited circumstances. Under the rules, EAWs are required if there's nuclear waste, electric generating facilities, petroleum refineries, transmissions lines, pipelines, industrial facilities, mineral mining, paper mills, and other hazardous waste facilities. I don't think MEPA was designed or intended to require environmental review anytime a city constructs a street. Here on Summit Avenue, the construction or the infrastructure is 100 years old. It needs to be replaced. The city's done enough overlay and patching projects. The entire street needs to be rebuilt. I think we have discretion to add a bike lane within our right-of-way without requiring additional environmental review. The relator argues that under subpart 31 that this is a historic place. The definition of that, I don't think they're correct. It applies only to properties listed on the National or State Register. The actual street isn't listed. There are numerous homes on the street that are listed, but not the street itself. And further, that category does not apply specifically when the project is being reviewed or can be reviewed under Section 106 in consultation with the Historic Preservation Commission or the Minnesota State Historic Preservation Office, that's SHPO. If you look to the SART plan, we do indicate in there that we are intending to do Section 106 review. So this is not a mandatory category of EAW because we are going to conduct a Section 106 review.
Okay. We are going to Council, I note that your time has expired, so I'll give you, if you want to just sum up in one or two sentences.
Yes, yeah, so I'd say the RGU's decision to issue a negative declaration is not arbitrary or capricious. This has been studied for 2 years, culminating in a 277-page report. We address their concerns for curbs. The curbs are going to be replaced if possible. We have an extensive plan for the tree canopy. We also found that there are only 6% of bicyclists feel comfortable riding.
All right, I think you've gone longer. I think what you're asking us to do is affirm.
All right, we're asking you to affirm.
Thank you. Council for Relator, you will have the last word.
It's not often that I have to lower the podium. thank you again, Your Honors. I think where I want to start is with whether this is a project. That's obviously been the focus of oral argument today. And I just want to point the court again to the standard in the EQB rules, which is that an EAW must be prepared as early as practicable in the development of the proposed project. And I haven't heard anything today that would suggest that in this case, environmental review is not practicable. The city was able to, in the 100% plan, estimate, we believe it's an inaccurate estimate, but estimate that 221 trees would be damaged. If that is not a sufficiently definite plan to warrant what environmental review, I don't know what is, and at what point will we do environmental review? We still haven't heard at what point this would actually be ripe. There's been discussion of various funding sources and a lack of funding. There's nothing in the EQB rules that requires that there be a definite source of funds for environmental review to be completed. I would also note that this last fall, the City of St. Paul approved a 1% sales tax dedicated to street reconstruction. That would be available to reconstruction of the street, which the city claims is part and parcel with the bike lane. And so, again, I would just stress that no funding source is required and that it should be done as early as practicable in the process so that it can influence the decisions of the responsible governmental units. I would also like to go back and discuss the arborist reports. I really appreciate, and I know my client does, that you raised those reports. There has been no rebuttal of our arborist's report. Our arborists concluded, and we submitted with our petition for an EAW, that arborist report that estimated that 60% of the trees along Summit Avenue would be destroyed.
But didn't the city do its own assessment and disagree with that? I mean, I thought there was competing evidence on that point.
The city did its own desktop survey where it looked at trees and estimated, based on GIS data, whether there would be excavation within that critical root zone. It did not do an on-the-ground analysis, and it still has not responded to the arborist report submitted by SOS. That is something that would have to be done as part of an environmental assessment worksheet. SOS would have an opportunity to submit its own evidence, and in the record of decision regarding whether to complete an environmental impact statement, the city would actually have to analyze the arborist report and give a reasoned decision for why it rejected that. We don't have that from the city right now.
Our job is what in looking at the city's decision? I mean, when I look at the city's decision, it talks about the petition evidence alleges X, Y, and Z. We disagree, and it explains why it disagrees. True, it doesn't specifically respond to a piece of evidence submitted in connection with the petition. From our review, are we just simply looking at whether the record evidence, there's substantial record evidence to support the city's decision here, irrespective of whether it mentions every or responds to each piece of evidence? Does it have to explicitly reject it? What's the standard for our review?
I think with that specific issue, you would apply the arbitrary and capricious standard. Are there enough danger signs, I think, in the words of the case law, that the city has exercised its will and not its judgment? Did the city come in and get the environmental assessment worksheet petition and say, we're not going to do an environmental assessment worksheet, and kind of backfill or rationalize why it wasn't going to do it? It's failure to respond to the arborist report from SOS is one of those danger signs. I would say some of the other danger signs are the failure to explain why at its meeting in June of 2022, it said the exact designs that it is now proposing are not recommended. Why did it reject its own consultant's report that the curb not be removed? And rejected our arborist report. It said it didn't even explain why it rejected our arborist report. It didn't even explain why it rejected its own consultant's report. And so this court can't.
I think a lot of it was tied to the notion of mitigation, right? I mean, that's a big part of what the city says is, yes, there's going to be a loss of trees. We're going to replant them. That was a big part of it. And we will take all these steps we can to protect those that are near the curbs that are going to be replaced. I mean, seems to me that's an explanation, is it not?
Again, for mitigation to work in that factor, it has to be specific. It can't be what the Supreme Court has called vague assurances of good intentions. And that's all we have in this case. I'll just really briefly, it said tree replacement and protection will be initiated and controlled during construction. How will the trees be protected? It doesn't say that in its response. And in its plan itself, it says these different things will be done if possible. And I submit that when it gets to that specific design and engineering phase, it is going to discover it's not possible, and at that point, it will be too late. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you both for your helpful arguments. We really appreciate that. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. Thank you.